Tom Woods Show, episode 1890.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, Tom Woods here. Well, I told you a couple of days ago about what happened at the state convention of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. There was a clean sweep. All the crazy lunatics who've been running the party, who wouldn't have known libertarianism if it punched them in the face, but who jumped on every leftist bandwagon under the sun, they were driven out, and actual libertarians replaced them. It's an amazing thing. And joining us today is Charles Melchin, who is the new chair of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. We want to talk about what happened and what's coming in the future. So, Charles, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an incredible honor.
I was invited to speak at the convention, at the LP Nevada convention, and I just couldn't make it. Like, it just wasn't enough notice. I had too much going on that week. Plus, I had this LASIK surgery that I had scheduled for so long, I couldn't do it.
Can I stop you there?
Yeah.
Who invited? Oh, yeah. No, I remember that, right? So, yeah, we definitely tried to get as many people here as possible. I was thinking of the other one, the one that AFP was doing there, like the day before.
Right. I was invited to that, too.
Yeah.
But I was invited to come out to Nevada. And then after, when I saw how glorious the outcome was, and people were at an after party, and the mood was so ebullient, I thought, I should have been out there. This is stupid. What am I sitting home here with these stupid sunglasses on and LASIK aftermath and all this when I could be out with my people?
It's absurd how much national attention the little lowly old Nevada state convention got. Considering last year there were like 35 people at the convention, that was it. And this year you had Joe Bishop Henchman was supposed to come out.
He's the LP, the chairman of the Libertarian National Committee. Not everybody knows these names.
The chair, the national chair of the, and as well as, Anthony Samaroff was generous enough to come out and come here. Angela McArdle was generous enough. Originally, Karen Ann Harlow's tried to, and she's the secretary for the national. So we would have had a fair number of what I'd consider like noteworthy figures in a room for what last year, barely filled a classroom worth of people. So it would have been great to have you here, certainly. And a lot of that was like, we were trying to, give as many reasons for, our side to show up as possible. And you are sort of a celebrity within the Libertarian Party of Nevada because you've been such a lightning rod in that the other side has so consistently attacked you on like their public forums. It's difficult to understand what the strategy was behind that.
Yeah. And attacking Ron Paul too.
Yes.
I mean, why would you think attacking Ron Paul wasn't going to have consequences?
And clearly it did.
It did.
Clearly it did. Yeah. And they set up that attack months after the last time they held party elections. And I kind of wonder if that was intentional because they knew that they had as long as possible to sort of let that water pass under the bridge and let time go by, heal wounds. But nobody forgot. It was certainly a rallying cry and things of that nature. Like their takeover is largely like hung around their own necks. They really did it to themselves. If they'd just been a bit less bad, really.
Right. Right. I think we're too deep into the weeds, though, already. Let's go back to the very beginning of the story.
Absolutely.
So obviously there are all different styles and different flavors of libertarianism in different state parties. But there was just something, it seems to me, unique about the Libertarian Party of Nevada, especially, I mean, and we could go on, and you gave a lot of examples. How you could go all through 2020 not managing to pencil in time for a single word about what was going on in the world, because I think probably most of these people are blue-pilled, and they do think we should all stay 6 feet away and don't go anywhere and be inhuman and all that because the state's officials, are rarely wrong. I mean, they always mean well, but occasionally, because they're a bunch of jokers, they inadvertently make mistakes. I mean, that's their sort of worldview. So we got absolutely no acknowledgement of anything that was happening. I would think there are some libertarian parties where state parties where they're, they're factions, but, sometimes they can get along on some things and it's not, it's not like they're at each other's throats. But I would think that the Libertarian Party of Nevada, the way it was up till recently, was so hostile to somebody like you, namely a normal libertarian who believes in the non-aggression principle, that can I assume that you didn't bother? I mean, were you part of the party?
So the first convention I went to was back in 2018 before like problem really became super apparent. And while I was at that convention, like I'd see, yeah, there were a few minor things that were sort of off-putting, but it was difficult to put your finger on. And it wasn't until the Ron Paul week in like July of 2019 that it really became crystal clear how bad the problem was. And that really sort of activated me. After that convention, I was just sort of like, I'd go to socials, but that's it. And then after the Ron Paul week, that's when there started to be like a coalescing of like a rebel force, right? The opposition started sort of organizing after that because it became clear something needed to be done. The way that I think of it, it's like if you go to a restaurant and you order like a medium rare steak and you receive a steak and it's only medium, you're like, it's not what I wanted, but it's good enough. I'm not going to complain about it. I'm certainly not going to send it back to the kitchen, right? Yeah. But in this case, like we're hoping for medium rare and out comes like straight up shoe leather. And at this point, it's just unacceptable and you need to do something. I don't care. I'm willing to wait another 30 minutes if I can get something that's less terrible than this. And so it's just so bad, really, that it was originally after the Ron Paul week, maybe a half dozen to eight of us that would sort of meet on a semi-regular basis, including a friend of yours, Adam Heyman, excellent individual who's really been
a former guest on the show.
Yes, a key to really organizing and incredibly congenial individual. Yeah, so we've really been working for almost 2 years now and trying to solidify what really came to fruition on this past Saturday.
All right, so let's back up. I want to ask you a few background. First of all, you keep talking about a Ron Paul week. Can you just clarify that?
Absolutely. So starting July 1st of 2019, with their official accounts, they started identifying all the ways. The way that they put it was that the Libertarian Party goes beyond Ron Paul, right? That it's sort of a framing of why he's not good enough of a libertarian. And so they, over the course of 5 days, they focused on things like his position on abortion, his position on immigration. They focused on the newsletters. Those are the three that come to mind. But even in those, there's an understanding that within the libertarian community, there's a lot of really good faith arguments on both sides, certainly of abortion and immigration, like how exactly those aren't settled, I feel, within libertarianism, both with the lowercase and I think uppercase L. And they just, anybody that would go in there and try and defend Ron Paul would immediately be hounded at by official accounts and executive committee members. It was really just sort of the worst style of messaging one could possibly imagine. Because if you're liberty curious and you go and you like examine this page, you're like, whoa, like they're attacking Ron Paul. Like if Ron Paul isn't good enough to be a libertarian, I am definitely not good enough to be a libertarian. So I'm just going to go ahead and like go somewhere else because this place has nothing for me.
Right.
And so it was a masterclass on terrible messaging.
Okay. So it was that kind of thing. Yeah, but of course there are, you know, as you say, on abortion, there's Libertarians for Life. Mm-hmm. There's on immigration, John Hospers, the guy who won an electoral vote as the Libertarian Party's presidential nominee, has an article called A Libertarian Argument Against Open Borders. Now, just because John Hospers says something doesn't make it true,
sure,
but it does show that we are still arguing this among ourselves. And you know, maybe you think the other side's argument is just stupid and ridiculous, but John Hospers is not stupid and ridiculous. He was a pretty smart guy. So at the very least, you take the position that Walter Block takes. Walter Block could not possibly be more open borders. But his view is, I have very dear friends who are at least as smart as I am, who are not sure that mine is the correct position. So although I still believe mine to be the correct position, mm-hmm, I'm not going to write these people out of the movement. Instead, I'm going to write articles challenging them, and we're going to hash it out like scholars the way normal people do. I'm not going to call them Nazis and, you know, things that abnormal people do.
Well, and especially within libertarianism, like we should have a lot of humility in the positions that we take at any given time, because especially going back to Hayek's work, like we need to accept the limitation of knowledge. Like there's a lot of things we just don't know, especially on extremely complex subjects. We shouldn't just assume that because this is the answer that I've reached, that it is the singular right answer for all of society. It may be the right answer for me, but perhaps not for everyone. So it seems to be extreme hubris to say, like, oh, your answer is 100% wrong, especially when how it engages with the non-aggression principle is extremely fuzzy in how its long-term impact with how society's trajectory and all that.
So let's say, again, I need people to really get the depth of the problem here, because these were people who, the way I put it was, they wouldn't have known libertarianism if it punched them in the face, but there wasn't a single left-wing bandwagon they didn't immediately leap onto. And if we didn't leap onto it, then it was something wrong with us. We had to have their priorities. And their priorities, suspiciously, were always the establishment's priorities. Whatever the establishment said was the cause of the day, they were on it. But if the establishment said, well, now listen, you got to listen to Dr. Fauci over here, they were all set to listen to Dr. Fauci. So it really makes you wonder, well, why would you be a libertarian? You're just like a free trade Democrat or something. Like, what's the point of doing this?
That's absolutely it. And going back to the Ron Paul thing, right, the counter to that would be celebrating heroes that you do like, right? Here are the libertarians that we should look up to, because they sort of set it up as though this is going to be a serious. It never was. I've never seen the cohort of individuals that were running the Libertarian Party of Nevada like speak to their heroes. What is it that brought them into the party in the first place? Who are the libertarians that they truly respect? And it was very telling when at the convention, Angela and Anthony were both there, and we, our contingent were eager to have them speak at the convention, because you don't get those sort of that caliber of individuals are on a regular basis. And so when we offered up, we're like, hey, let's let Anthony Samaroff, the great Anthony Samaroff, speak.
They have no idea who that even is, right?
Yeah, they're like, well, why should this guy speak? Who's Anthony Samaroff? And that's very telling. And like, it's consistent with everything, because I remember going to one of the socials, and one of the former county chairmen, who was also a congressional candidate, we were having a conversation, and like the subject of like naming schools came up, and I was like, yeah, you never hear of Hazlitt Elementary. And his response is, who's Hazlitt?
Oh my gosh. And
he's a congressional candidate for the Libertarian Party. And that sort of really solidified the whole nature of the state of this. They have no philosophical moorings, especially on economic issues. And they did recently, a couple of them were trying to explain like why minimum wage is bad. And it was so uncomfortable for them. You could tell that it was incredibly difficult. It was like watching a four-year-old trying to explain quantum physics. They knew it was bad. They just had no way of actually comfortably explaining why something that for most libertarians, explaining why the minimum wage is a bad idea should be easy enough. But for them, it was just extremely awkward, like trying to crawl into a one-armed sweater.
Well, tell me, when Angela and Anthony were speaking, were people on the other side just ignoring them? Or what, were they sitting there politely at least, or what?
I wasn't paying attention to the rest of the room
okay.
at that time.
Okay.
Angela's speech was really fiery. It was great. There was a lot of hope that the national chairman would be there. It would have been really fun to see those two engage with one another, because there's speculation that she's announced, right, that she's going to be running against him next year.
Yes.
And so, it's a little bit of a preview of what's to come, which would have been great. And in fact, next year's convention is going to be in Nevada, the national convention. And so we changed very much the dynamic of the state party in which the next year's convention is going to be. So there's a tiny bit of national implication on that front, which is fun. We really enjoyed that.
When you walked into that room and you looked around, did you say to yourself, we won this thing?
Yes. I think before we sat down and before everybody was credentialed, I was feeling really good about it. I had the privilege of going up to the Washoe County Convention, which was just 2 weeks prior to the state convention. And we have an amazing team up there of organizers, Katie and Chris and Spencer and Brad. They've all done phenomenal jobs of reaching out and just expanding that community. And they're large and vibrant in the Reno area. So I knew those faces, and I knew the faces down in the Las Vegas area. And so when I saw everybody congregating, like, I was the only person who went to both those county conventions. And so I was the only person who like recognized the faces. And I was like, oh yeah, we've definitely got this. And yeah, every single vote, we had about 2/3 of the room, always between 50 and 2/3 of the vote always went our way.
Now, is there anybody from the old regime there you feel like you can work with, or what?
Yes. So there's definitely individuals who were marginalized and essentially exiled by the old regime. So they're not the old guard. They're like the old guard, right, who used to be a major part of the party, but then they just got pushed to the side and they weren't playing the game that they were expected to play. And so we've connected with some of those individuals. And in fact, one of them we're thrilled to have on the state leadership team with us. And so we were able to run the table, but there's one individual who has been around for a long time and he's not brand new blood coming up into it. And which I remember the other night hearing Scott Horton say something about like the difference right now, this schism within the Libertarian Party, a lot of it is generational. And in that room of about 100 people, like it was very apparent that it was a generational thing. You had like everybody who was over the age of 50-ish, most people over the age of 50-ish, and then like everybody under the age of 40. It was just like one side and the other in almost every respect. And it probably, again, goes back to the Ron Paul thing and the influence that he had on all these young kids and how much enthusiasm he just really injected deep inside their bones that is still there and was just waiting to come out and have this opportunity to exercise itself again. And unfortunately for the old guard, they just, their actions gave them a lot of cause to actually get up and do something about it.
I want you to, you said run the table. I want to really focus on exactly how much of a clean sweep we're talking about here. This is really unbelievable.
Right. So it's it was very much organized by the Mises Caucus. And in most states, when the Mises Caucus has a lot of success, even in somewhat oppositional state affiliates, it's in large part from working with other people who are good within the state organization, right? The ones that they endorse, the ones that they work with, the ones that are friendly, but they're not necessarily explicitly with the caucus. The pool of individuals that were left inside the state party was so small. So in 2019, 17 people attended the state convention just 2 years ago, 17. This year, they credentialed 114. So what, like an expansion by like 5x or something like that over the course of 2 years. So there were so few people that we could work with that it eventually became obvious to us that if we were going to actually have any meaningful change in the state, we just need to put our own organizers in every executive committee seat. And that's exactly what we ended up doing. One of our goals, like we want to grow the party with every breed of libertarian and like get them activated, make them know that like this, we have you have a home again. We invite you in, we want you here, which is something that just wasn't the case previously. It was absolutely a little social club previously. And so we're hoping that in the next 2 years, we'll grow the party enough and identify some really good talent so that a much better suited state chair can come in and replace me, someone who is really built for it. Because I think in a lot of ways, we're kind of the Marines. We're the ones that stormed the beach. We're the ones that took a new slice of land. And I guess we'll see if we're suited to like actually grow and manage it. But for now, the first task at hand was just getting it out of the hands of bad actors into individuals who are genuinely interested in growing the party as opposed to single-mindedly focused on getting a big L libertarian elected, a goal of which they have never been successful at in this state. So single-mindedly going after a goal that you've never achieved seems at a point you just need to ask yourself if you should refocus your efforts on something else. And so for us, it's grow the liberty movement. If we're going to elect someone, if that's our ultimate goal, the first thing we need to do is focus on getting more libertarians excited about libertarianism.
Yeah, no kidding. And the kind of messaging I heard from individuals from that party involved the non-aggression principle is stupid, and we hate that, and Ron Paul's stupid, and Murray Rothbard is stupid, and, you know, okay, so you're different from everybody else in the world. How exactly, right? So you're 12% different from Joe Biden and 30% different from some Republican. I mean, I don't even get it. So how is it, what's your messaging going to be like? I mean, you say that libertarians are welcome and so on and so forth, but are there particular issues you're going to focus on that maybe we're not focused on before?
There's so much ground that has not been touched, just so much low-hanging fruit. Everything is there because they've focused on, there's been a few social issues that they focused on well, but that was it. They neglected everything else. And so lockdowns first and foremost, mask mandates, COVID passports, anything COVID related, any sort of mandates that restrict Nevadans from living how they want to live is first and foremost, especially since that's what's dictating everybody's life. It's the moment of our age. And so it obviously is the first go-to. And at the same time, continuing, you know, being more bold and unapologetic about our libertarianism. So for so many of the people who were in charge here, it seemed like they almost like, yes, this is the position that we take. We're sorry. There's almost like this, they regret that they need to take this libertarian position to the point that, you know, on lockdowns, even when they were challenged, they would avoid, well, why haven't you spoke about lockdowns? And they'd just be like, oh, no, it's, you know, we'll get around to it sort of thing. I mean, it wasn't even that.
Yeah, yeah, at some point, yeah, it's not. Look, we have this extremely minor issue that 8 million people are already talking about that we need to focus on.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, absolutely. That every other institution already agrees on. And it's like, what are you offering? Why would anybody join the Libertarian Party to just be a powerless Democrat is more or less what the party was presenting itself as. And a couple times you've mentioned multiple ones who have a problem with the non-aggression principle. And I had an opportunity to have a conversation with one of them. So I asked him, what is your philosophical lodestone essentially? And for him, it was utilitarianism. And the reason that he opposed the non-aggression principle is because it can be used to justify terrible things. And yet he's a utilitarian, so which strikes me as extremely odd, because if anything could ever be used to justify terrible things, it seems to me utilitarianism is right at the top there, especially if you're willing to throw the non-aggression principle out the door.
Yeah, no kidding. So that's why we tend to emphasize it.
Yeah.
So there's another part of all this. Okay, the messaging was bad. There was nastiness. Every one of their critics was some right-wing alt-righter. I mean, anytime I see that, my critics are all fascists. I think, all right, you're a deluded lunatic. I don't even want to talk to you. You have some kind of issue. I don't know what you're talking about. There are very, 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 very few fascists in America. They are not the problem. They have no money. They have no support. They're all losers. But the problem is people like this think everybody's a fascist. It's the whole thing's absurd. And yet when they tried to make that appeal saying, there's going to be a fascist takeover of the LP in Nevada, we got to band together and stop that, they couldn't get anybody off their rear ends whatsoever to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, they were able to excite, depending on how you measure it, but at most 35 people across the state of, what, like 3 million? Was all, and there's 20,000 registered libertarians in the state, but they were only able to turn out about 35, maybe as low as 18, depending on which race you use as the measure. But it was, and they did everything they could to turn out their allies and anybody who would support them. They went through and they made phone calls and they text messaged and they emailed, and now they emailed members who hadn't been active in years, and they would send them an email saying, like, we're about to be taken over by white nationalists. We need you to come and help. And I, you know, fortunately those members would come to us and be like, you should know that they're spreading these, you know, they're saying this about you, which I think that ultimately it ends up working in our advantage, because it excites us to like really get them out of office. It shows how extremely toxic and desperate they are. And to have individuals like that and position of leadership within any libertarian affiliate is troubling.
Hey, everybody, let me just get a word in here to thank our sponsor, Merck Research. I am sure many of you are tired of hearing there's going to be a stock market crash just around the corner every day for the last 10 years. Well, our friends over at Merck Research provide unbiased monthly analysis on the economy and stock market. And through a consistent set of easy-to-read charts and frameworks with written analysis, these monthly reports provide an intellectually consistent view on the market and economy. You can download the PDF chart books with analysis or watch the video voiceover walkthrough. Their goal is to help you better understand what's really going on and ultimately to help you make better investment decisions. Almost all financial media, like all media, has become fear-mongering clickbait. And if you're tired of the nonstop and inaccurate doom and gloom and want an objective and insightful summary of what's going on in the market and economy, Go over to tomwoods.com/research for a no-risk 3-month free trial. And it's only $20 a month after that. So for your no-risk 3-month free trial, check it out at tomwoods.com/research. Now the other thing I want to talk about is, besides the issues, there was a major personality problem at the top for a while. Somebody who was up to no good, let's say. How about commenting on that?
Yeah. So there was a previous chairman, not the most recent. So I believe this is what you're alluding to, right?
I can already tell you're hitting on exactly the issue.
Okay. So he misused party funds egregiously to the point. He used them so poorly that the current crop of leadership, who are bad in their own respects, felt compelled to essentially handcuff his ability to act as the chairman. They prevented him from spending any funds, and they essentially replaced him with someone else. But they didn't fully remove him from office. And this, as far as I can tell in looking back, there was no substantial consequences other than forcing him to not run for re-election, which I don't know how much of a consequence that is for, in their own words, emptying the party's bank accounts.
Oh, okay. Let's get it right out there. Spending it on what?
Well, spending it on the things that Las Vegas is best known for, right? Our prostitutes, our drugs, our cocaine. So, yeah. So that's apparently, according to the members themselves. That's according to the ex-com who recently was departed.
Now that, I think this almost boggles the mind. And then I saw some screen caps where one of the people who had been active in the party and on the, I guess, executive committee defended kind of looking the other way at this for a while because, well, we needed this guy to be chair. And as soon as we didn't need him anymore, we said, that's it. No more coke and hookers. Right. Wow, they really brought the hammer down on that guy.
I know, right? And it's difficult to say that his punishment was permanent either, because these same individuals, the leaders within the Libertarian Party of Nevada at that time, this would have been in 2016, the same individual who was essentially removed as chairman, prevented from acting as chairman, he went with them to the national convention in Orlando in 2016, where he ran for national chairman against Nick Sarwak at that time. And all but one of the delegates from Nevada voted for him to be the next national chairman, even though they had already removed him as state chairman, essentially.
These are just extremely problematic. Extremely unserious people is what we can say.
And to them, it's a matter of he gets things done. Yes, he may have problems.
Well, you can say that again.
He helps us put on big conventions, and he brings in lots of donors that he then turns around and spends the money
right.
on himself.
No, it doesn't really count if you bring in donors, then you embezzle the funds, right? I mean, that it kind of offsets it a little bit.
Fortunately, obviously, he wasn't successful at running for chairman, but in spite of the fact that they all knew what he was doing with party funds, they were still doing what they could to elevate him from being a recently departed state chairman to elevating him to a national chairman.
Yeah, it's what can you say? So, we had a Zoom call the other night, and I was asked to comment. You were there. And I said, I'm so blown away by this for two reasons. Number one, by now, I've just grown accustomed to losing.
Yeah.
I just assume I'm always going to lose, no matter how strong the arguments are, no matter how weak the opposition is. For some reason, the good guys just lose, and I've just kind of grown accustomed to that. And this time, that didn't happen. So I'm a little surprised at that. But the second reason I'm so pleased and disoriented is we realized just what a paper tiger this whole thing was. And for some reason, I just felt like it was part of the natural order of things that these crazy lunatics who despised libertarianism were entrenched and there was just nothing to be done about it. But no, there was. Good, decent people got tired of being abused and called ridiculous names by hysterics. And people who actually believe in libertarianism got together and said, nope, you're not going to destroy our good name and our ideas anymore with your ridiculous antics. So off you go. And it actually happened.
Yeah. And I don't know how it certainly happened, like to as an insane a degree as one could possibly imagine here, right? Of seven positions, we won every single one of them. If we had had time at the convention, we would have been able to pass some bylaw amendments that we'd proposed, including because Nevada currently has the most expensive cost to be a member of a state affiliate, $60, in spite of the fact that they give you, there's zero value that you get from it, right? For the past 2 years, they haven't issued a single newsletter. They don't do any podcasts. They haven't done any socials since November of 2019. Like $60, as opposed to the national average, which was $25. So we weren't able to get that. And there were a couple other things that we were looking to do, but hopefully we're able to make those adjustments soon. But I think in most states, it's not necessary and perhaps not even possible to replicate what we've done here in Nevada. There was just such an urgent need that it was extremely easy to energize people to action. And one thing that we're extremely conscious of, the entire XCOM, this is something that we're very aware of, is we are under an extreme microscope now because this is a Mises Caucus state party. It's essentially the only explicitly Mises Caucus state party. And we need to perform really well, because if we don't, it'll reflect poorly on the entire organization and it'll be used as an excuse for, see, this is why you can't let the Mises Caucus take over your state party. If you do, you know, it won't grow. But there's also the other side of that. And if we have a lot of success, if we grow the party, if we're able to influence legislation to one degree or another, if we're able to work with other liberty organizations here in Nevada, of which there's a number that have just been shut out from working with the Libertarian Party of Nevada. They've wanted nothing to do with them, meaning the party wanted nothing to do with the other organizations. And we've already made strides towards building those relationships and working with them. And so we're really hoping to have a lot of substantial wins and really re-energize the liberty movement here in Nevada. And if we can, I think that there's a good chance that you'll see more of this and other states recognizing that, hey, if we want those same sort of gains, then maybe we should consider doing more of what the Mises Caucus is doing. And it's also definitely a warning to other libertarian organizations of if you decide to try and use the same strategies and messaging style that the Libertarian Party of Nevada was using up until early 2021, that there will be a reckoning. And so it hopefully brings them to a certain degree of moderation if they're more inclined towards something foolish that like what the Libertarian Party of Nevada was engaging in until recently.
What's the website for the party?
It's lpnevada.org.
Okay. I'll put that at tomwoods.com/1890 because people in the state, I want them to help you out.
Please, we could use as much help as possible because we're really starting from zero, especially after the episode back in 2016 with the chairman and his shenanigans at that time. It really scared away, understandably, a lot of individuals that previously made it a point to do what they could to support the party.
Yeah.
And so we're really trying to rebuild those relationships and hopefully we're able to do that.
They did so much damage. They burned so many bridges just to support their pet causes that everybody else supports anyway. So I do want to say before we depart, though, because when I said starting from zero, that reminded me, even I was shocked to look at the Twitter feed of the LP of Nevada after you guys were victorious. I mean, that thing was a you-know-what show. I mean, that thing was toxic and filled with absurdities that at best were tangentially related to libertarianism. And then I noticed that with the exception, now there are a couple tweets since then, but with the exception of the tweet mentioning the state convention, the entire history of that entire Twitter feed had been wiped up.
Right.
Even I was blown away by that. Explain that decision.
So obviously we weren't a part of that. That was done prior to the keys to that account being handed over to us. And for 18 months, the most recent tweets were the attacks on Ron Paul. And
so you guys didn't delete all those tweets. They did on the way out?
No. Yes.
Yeah. Well, how stupid.
Well, so there was a lot of very basic mismanagement going on. It was a lot more than just what was seen publicly. Like as soon as the more we learn about the mismanagement of the organization, the more that we realize that this wasn't like some surface level laceration that can be, you know, dressed. This was like they're the marrow of the organization, had cancer, and right down to very basic organizational. And so there were a couple people, there was at least one individual, but there might have been multiple individuals who had access to that account. So we have no idea which individual decided to scorch their entire account. It's almost for the best, though.
Of course it is. You don't want to have to defend those stupid tweets. In a way, it's like, now I'm going to get people upset in Auburn, Alabama, but when I lived in Auburn, Alabama for 4 years, and when the Auburn Tigers would win a football game, you would go down to this corner in the downtown area, and the Auburn students would have toilet papered the trees. And what I wanted to try to explain to them is, no, 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 that's what the other team does to you when you lose. They toilet paper your tree. You don't vandalize your own space. So I always thought it would be funny for the opposing team to think, oh, we're going to go toilet paper some trees. And then get there and realize, no, the winning team already did that to their own trees. Then the maintenance has to go spend time cleaning them up. Like, why are you doing that? That makes you look ridiculous, right? So likewise, it seems like deleting a bunch of awful tweets that nobody wants is something that you guys should have done. But they did it for you.
Yeah. They really scrubbed the entire, every ounce of the Twitter feed.
And that's so funny. And here I was all set to defend you. To defend. It turns out you didn't do it.
Well, and those posts are still in their Facebook group. So they still exist. And we haven't met as an executive committee yet to discuss what exactly we want to do with some of the old stuff that we vehemently disagree with. We don't know if we should leave them there for some degree of posterity. Just recently, people have started commenting, so now they're getting bumped at the top again, which is a little frustrating. But I don't know. We need to sit down and decide if that's something that we're just going to nuke altogether, or if we're just going to leave it there as sort of a mark of shame and move past it. So I don't know. I can understand it from both sides, but we'll need to meet as a group to figure out how exactly we're going to handle that.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so lpnevada.org is the website. Yes, sir. All you folks who live there, go to that site, help out Charles and this great group of people. I was talking to Adam Heyman. Adam's a great libertarian. And as I said, I've had him on the show before, and he's lived there for an awful long time. And he was telling me just how impressed he is with the caliber of people who were there and who are now going to be running things, just in terms of how dedicated they are, smart, charismatic, you know, all the things that the old regime wasn't. So it's a real, real thrill, and congratulations to all of you.
Thank you. And if I can give, so my understanding is you two met on the inaugural Contra Cruise.
I had actually met him before at a Mises Institute event in Seattle, but we really got to know each other on those cruises.
Well, in a slightly different timeline, we should have already met, because I had tickets in hand to go on last year's Contra Cruise before the world got turned upside down.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a
better
shame.
Late than never. But yeah. So yeah, last year was supposed to be great. And it's just such a huge.
Oh, you have no idea the things I had planned for 2020 that got thrown in the bin. It's painful even to recall. So let's stay focused on the good news, which is normal people are in charge of the LP of Nevada. And for that, we can all raise a glass and cheer. So
Charles, I think we're a little better than normal, but thank you.
Well, that's just my favorite word these days when we have victory. So thanks again and best of luck.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, folks, before we go, if you're in the Pittsburgh area, the Libertarian Party's Mises Caucus is having a great event May 14th, 15th, this is 2021 for anybody listening in the future. And it's going to feature Michael Rechtenwald, whom you know from this show, of course, Dave Smith, Scott Horton, Jeff Deist, and others. It's going to be a tremendous time. So check that out. I created a shortcut link for that, tomwoods.com/Pittsburgh. So definitely go show up. That's in tandem with the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania convention. And it would be nice to see good things happen at that convention also. So come on out, check out the details, and be there for that, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.